Hello, I'm Liz Loza, and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast presented by Planters, satisfying your snack cravings for over 100 years. Do you know what satisfied me today? It is very easy. It is another Bears victory, and thank you, Brett Rader. I had some celebratory socks to lounge with afterwards. I don't care that Nick Foles is only throwing maybe a tub a week and under 200 yards. I don't care that David Montgomery did not go over 59 rushing yards. All I care about is the win. It happened. I'm done. Matt, let's go.
Love it. Yep. All that matters is your record. Results over process, no doubt.
That's the way we like to keep it, especially in 2020. Matt, you had a very nice process that you spoke about on Fantasy Football Live, and it resulted in a positive result. Let's talk about Houston at Tennessee and that fire passing game that we need to respect from the Titans.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that we've seen really ever since Ryan Tannehill took over this offense that this is one of the best and most efficient, and that's the key part, most efficient passing games in the NFL. They're not going to put up some of the raw volume stats of other teams, but you know, it isn't just Tannehill either, and it's the design of the offense and the comfortability with which he plays in it. You've also got really good, underrated, high-end players. You know, there's not a ton, you know, again, they're not going to go like 4 or 5 deep at wide receiver, but when everybody's out there, you know, it's not as if Adam Humphries is like a total scrub or something like that, but, you know, A.J. Brown, I think, is a superstar talent at wide receiver. Jonnu Smith, even though he missed part of the day today, or a huge chunk of it today, still superstar talent when he's out there, but it's Tannehill's comfortability in the system. It's the way Arthur Smith, the guy that's got it, you know, I think will be involved in head coaching discussions at the end of the year for sure. You know, he's maybe a guy that the Jets could look at, whatever, some team that wants to recover their broken offense. Everything is clicking in Tennessee right now. And I think really, I mean, the bigger story obviously is Derrick Henry in this game. I don't know that anyone's like shocked by it, but it's probably his best game of the season so far too. So everything went right for the Titans today, you know, except the fact that they really couldn't stop a Houston offense that has definitely exercised the demons, at least on one side of the ball.
When you mentioned Derrick Henry, the reason I wanted to start with the passing game was because we're used to Henry not being very involved when it comes to that aspect of the offense. We're used to seeing him murder men like Josh Norman and just smash other defenders and rip off these crazy long runs. But the fact that he was fourth in team targets with 5 looks, he only caught 2 of those, but my gosh, 26 yards for a long game is pretty nice. And it seems like this offense, you were spot on in that it's it has depth, unexpected depth, and there's a cultivation of talent and new wrinkles and layers added to it because of the confidence that the team, all pieces of it, coaching staff and players, have in Ryan Tannehill and the stability that he brings.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's just one of those units that I think is going to still be a little discounted. I mean, obviously, like in DFS and other places, they were discounted today because they had played on Tuesday, you know, pricing sets before their game was over. But still, I wonder when the market is going to catch up to some of these guys like Tannehill. I mean, he was sub like QB 15 in drafts this summer. A.J. Brown was really the only passing game asset that was priced at his ceiling, you know, so there's a lot of, I think, value still surrounding this passing game because we think of Tennessee as this conservative offense. And, you know, as a run game operation, they're pretty standard. I do think Henry brings like a different element than many other teams, but a lot of what they do in the NFL, I mean, you look at the numbers with and without play action for Ryan Tannehill, it's a huge gap. I mean, they just call plays that work in the modern NFL.
On the Houston side of things, you saw all of the receivers get involved in the red area of the field, which was great because for so long we're like, well, we know that Will Fuller is probably going to lead this receiving core in targets, assuming he's healthy. And then maybe Brandon Cooks will find a touchdown and maybe Randall Cobb will get lucky, but maybe one of the tight ends, Darren Fells, will fight. But now all 4 of them got into this circus atmosphere. Week 7, the Texans will travel to Green Bay to take on what I imagine will be a rather salty Packers squad. Do you think moving forward outside of Will Fuller, and obviously that game bodes well for David Johnson, who, as we've discussed, maybe isn't a world beater, but in a soft matchup, he can exploit. So we're starting David Johnson for sure, who also found the end zone. But of these players and receivers beyond Will Fuller, who are you most interested in on a regular basis?
I think it's probably Brandon Cooks for a couple of reasons. One, I mean, he's been super productive over the last 2 weeks since O'Brien's been gone. And, you know, that might not be a one-to-one comparison, but he scores again today. He's over 220 yards over the last 2 weeks. Like, he's been out there pretty much all season, coming into his big breakout game, you know, even before he had popped without O'Brien under the head coaching title. This guy was on the field for 83% of Deshaun Watson's dropbacks in terms of like when he runs a route. Like, this guy was out there and involved. I think Cooks is going to continue to be a feature in this passing game. It's also key too that, like, since O'Brien has left, the two things they've done more, again, they've used more play action and they've also taken more shots downfield. I think that really fits well with Brandon Cooks' skill set too. I mean, Randall Cobb will be a guy in decent matchups. You know, he catches a touchdown today. That's great. You know, I was thinking he was going to end up getting more volume in this spot, but there will be some times to use Randall Cobb. But I think Cooks will be the one that's more valuable throughout the entirety of the season.
And certainly has the higher ceiling.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Browns and the Steelers, because Pittsburgh put an end to any optimism that the Browns were trying to cultivate themselves. We'll start with the Steelers side of things, though, because Chase Claypool did keep it going, unlike Cleveland. Four catches, 74 yards, and a rushing touchdown. This was his fifth touchdown in 2 weeks, second in back-to-back efforts. We all know we're starting him whether or not Deontay Johnson is involved, right? Like, I think at this point, we talked about this even last week, he's probably earned himself more opportunities, even if Johnson were to return from the back issue or whatever ailment he may be nursing at the time. I think the big story is Juju Smith-Schuster and whether or not you can even think of him as a wide receiver three anymore. I'm going to admit, if we were playing Tilted or Jilted, I am now completely jilted on, well, I'm tilted and thinking about jilting. Does that make sense?
Totally. Now, let's skew positive first here, or at least, like, again, try to find the silver lining. As I feel like I say every week. With Juju, like, if this game had been more competitive, I think he gets more volume, right? Like, if Cleveland had put up a fight, I think there's going to be more. He's going to get more than six damn yards. This is what I'm saying. But at the same time, this is the thing that I've been talking about with Juju pretty much, like, from the jump. He's not a guy that beats man coverage. He's not a guy that wins downfield. He is a volume-based player that you can scheme open and is really good at getting open versus zone coverage. But now Pittsburgh has, theoretically, when Deontay Johnson's back, they have two guys who can win outside on vertical routes against man coverage and can beat press. That is definitely what Chase Claypool is. Like, I can't believe, you know, there was, like, tight end talk with this guy. He looks like Vincent Jackson out there, if we're being, like, conservative about it. He looks like Vincent Jackson. You know, Deontay Johnson's a guy who can win across the route tree. He's clearly somebody that Ben wants to lean on based on the first two games usage. So, like, that's going to, I think all of that is going to continue to be a theme. And for Juju, it's just the volume is probably not going to be there to the point where he's going to even come close to meeting those expectations. It's also a little strange that when you look at this guy with a great resume, by and large, like a guy that everybody seems to like, is a very likable player, at least publicly, they have not extended his contract. Like, they've let him walk into the last year of his rookie deal. It's worth wondering if there's some fire beyond that smoke.
Well, when you're mentioning the volume, though, Matt, like, the volume wasn't there. When we talked about him on FFL, we know that the ADOT heading into this game was 5 yards per target, right? Like, that's not awesome. Nobody likes that. So he does have to be volume based, but also he's not even seeing the volume. Like, he is getting James Washington saw more looks in this one than Juju Smith-Schuster, and in a matchup where Ben didn't need to push the ball deep. So there was, I mean, this could have been a dink and dunk, like, just keep things moving and why bother pressing opportunity. Especially given the matchup and the Browns being leaky versus the slot.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, if the game had been more competitive, I think he draws more targets. But that's only just because they'd have to throw the ball more. So that's, like, obviously that's the case. But at the same time, it's just there's just not much juice there in the role he's playing. And the reality of it is this is the role he has to play because he's not suited to be one of these outside guys. And that's always been the case if you've tracked him throughout his career. So there's not a ton of surprise there. Like these guys like Claypool and these guys like Johnson, they keep out targeting because their targets have more value behind them.
Let's talk about the Browns. Baker Mayfield ended up being benched in this one. I mean, when you look at the matchup, and we talked about this on FFL too, right? Like the Steelers' defensive line is wildly staunch. Like they can get after the quarterback. The O-line was banged up. Baker Mayfield is banged up. He wasn't able to rise to the occasion. The Steelers' secondary can be burnt, but it didn't matter. I don't really know what we – like if the Browns are not in a situation where they can just wholly lean on the run, they clearly do not have – Stefanski does not have the confidence to – and I don't know if Baker Mayfield has the confidence in himself either anymore to let it rip. Or maybe it is based on, you know, there's always when we're talking about OBJ and Jarvis Landry, they're obviously college buddies. And like maybe there's just not good energy around this group. And it's not connecting. It's not clicking.
Yeah, I mean, after the game, the head coach, Kevin Stefanski, basically says like this was a health-induced like benching. I wouldn't have pulled him if he was 100%. When he's 100%, he will be our starter. There's no question about it. Mayfield in his post-game presser says the injury had nothing to do with, like, didn't affect his play at all, which is a pretty standard player response. Like, I'm willing to just kind of like, you know, whatever. Like, this was not unexpected. Like, whether he's hurt or not, this is kind of the result I think you're going to expect out of this passing game because of the player that Mayfield is. Like, they totally have the training wheels on him, and it's great. It works in certain spots. Like, I love the way that Kevin Stefanski has designed this offense. They integrate a ton of concepts. They do man run schemes. They do zone gap. They do gap. They do everything. Like, there's a ton to love about the way they're scheming up their offense and the way that they get Baker Mayfield some of these layup plays that he did not have last year. But at the same time, at some point, you're gonna have situations where your quarterback, whether he's healthy or not, has to go up against a top-level pass rush, and the training wheels are going to fall off. And when they do, you're probably going to get a result like this. I think that's the player that Mayfield is. Today, just it wasn't surprising. The result wasn't surprising, whether he was hurt or not. This is sort of where this team is expected to be at this point.
And I think both things can be true. I mean, you're going to bench your starting quarterback, hopefully, and like let him stew a little bit. Let him watch. Maybe that motivates, but I just think it is foolhardy to run an offense that invites close games when you don't trust your quarterback to bail you out of those close games, and then you end up with a blowout. But let's talk about Atlanta and Minnesota, because there was a bit of a reversal here. We talked about Kirk Trap being trending on Twitter, and it was Matt Ryan that actually had, you know, if we make an in-season parallel after, and we talked about the Texans earlier, after B.O.B.'s demon was exercised out of the building, as you like to say, this offense leveled up, and now we see Matt Ryan potentially, this is not new, right? Raheem Morris had this effect on the defense in the middle of last year. That did happen. That's a thing that occurred. And so now Matt Ryan went from being ice cold to Matty Ice in a matchup that everybody was discounting, even though it was solid because of his previous play and, frankly, not knowing whether or not Julio Jones was just a decoy or back to doing or having the ability to do Julio Jones-like things.
Yeah, I think this result pretty much has almost 100% to do with the fact they get one of the best wide receivers in the game back to the level where he's at 137 yards and 2 touchdowns on a team high 10 targets. Like, yeah, that makes sense, right? Like, this is one of the best players at his position. He gets back. We don't know where he is health-wise, but I mean, here he is. He's obviously playing really well. It makes too much sense to look at the way the Falcons season has gone. The first two games, like, their offense is fine, and they're losing because their defense is terrible, and these obviously just horrific late-game twists of the knife. But, you know, then they go through this three-game slump where Ryan goes under 290 yards passing in every game, has just one touchdown over three games. That all while Julio Jones is playing just 15 snaps. And, you know, you can argue, I think, that the gap between Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley has certainly closed, But once you look at Ridley and Todd Gurley, who continues to play pretty well for the Falcons, or at least above expectation, once you get beyond those guys, there's not a lot in terms of defensive, like who's going to scare you from a defense perspective. Like there is not a ton of star power beyond those guys. So I think when you get Jones and Ridley back in there, that puts defenses back in a bind. That allows Matt Ryan to be the best version of himself.
Well, Kirk Cousins wasn't able to answer the call, I guess you could say, from the Viking side of things. I was honestly shocked when I saw at the top of the game Alexander Mattison being stuffed at the goal line repeatedly by a Falcons defense that we have talked about not being particularly good or efficient. What do you make of Mattison? I mean, listen, I have to say, like, heading into this matchup, I made the point on the last pod, not ours, but the one with Andy, that Mattison did rip off, what, 130-some scrimmage yards in the second half of the game against Seattle. But Dalvin Cook was on his way to a 200-plus day as well. You know, like, he ripped off, I want to say, close to 90, maybe over 90, before he exited shortly after the first half, right? So we know that the Seattle defense, like, was giving up giant holes. The question was, like, why couldn't Mattison capitalize beyond, like, initially, right? Because we know that the answer is, like, well, then the game was out of hand, and so game flow didn't work in his favor, yada, yada, right. But, like, the guy had a shot at the goal line, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, I don't know. It was definitely one of the more perplexing things of the day, right? Like, it seemed so easy to just think, okay, Cook out, Mattison in. Mattison's a pretty good player. He's played well whenever he's gotten opportunities. But sometimes things happen, you know, and this was one of those times, I think, is probably just the best way to look at it.
Yeah. Anyway, Cook will be back, so you don't need to scratch your head about it any further. But we will move on to Baltimore at Philadelphia. Didn't Lamar Jackson say that he wanted to run less, 108 yards and a touchdown on the ground today on top of 186 passing yards and a passing touchdown? We talked about this passing game not fully being in sync during our FFL halftime show and surmised that maybe Baltimore was playing the long game. And I did, after we talked, like, I'm watching that game and seeing Devin Duvernay getting more and more involved in creative ways, and Willie Snead is out there. And so maybe the passing game theory is in a matchup that, at least at that point, seemed pretty out of hand. They could try out some new stuff with some new players, also with the main focus being January, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I know. The thing is, like, I guess you could say that, like, right, like, getting some different players involved, you know. They almost let Philly back in this game, you know. That was pretty problematic on that end. You know, Carson Wentz just basically just throws the entire playbook out and just like, screw it, I'm just heaving it up to Travis Fulgham every chance I can get, trying to come back in this game.
And why not? And
hey, to their credit, like, yeah, why not, right? Like, this is probably the only thing that's going well for you from a passing offense perspective. But yeah, I think I'm just, I don't know how to feel about the Ravens. I'll admit to being, like, confused, you know? What do we do with this team that is clearly not firing on all cylinders? Like, we know the talent is there. They're frontline players, you know, guys like Marquise Brown, 57 yards on 4 catches, 6 targets. Like, Mark Andrews has had some is extremely volatile so far. Like, some of their best players are sort of just fading. It looks like they're clearly still trying to figure out their running back rotation. Like, I almost think they'd be better off if they just, like, settled on a guy. You know, like, they just settled on Mark Ingram. Like, let's go back to feeding Ingram the way we did last year. Or, like, let's just fully unleash J.K. Dobbins. Or, like, hell, let's give Gus Edwards 20 carries. I don't know. But, like, settle on one player.
But they're having the room to tinker. Like, I agree with you, but who cares? You know, like, from a non-fantasy perspective, if I didn't have, like, people blowing me up on Twitter being like, oh, what should I do with Marquise Brown? Like, I don't know. I think from a coaching standpoint, it's fascinating to see this team continue to be tweaked instead of just like, well, we know it worked last year. Let's copy and paste. Like, that's not how evolution happens. And maybe in this one, after the game got a little too close for comfort because they had been tweaking too long, as you mentioned. And then it's like, well, you know what? We do know what works. So Lamar, go out there and run. And they can always fall back on that. So I don't know. I think it's a fascinating experiment from a real NFL perspective. Less fascinating, though, is the Philadelphia Eagles. Miles Sanders, 9 carries for 118 rushing yards before he left with the knee injury. And then Boston Scott came in. And, you know, there was I guess we can call it a miscommunication, but I can just hear the Philly fans, which are not, you know, that's not a group of people that's necessarily demure about their feelings and their team, screaming about Boston Scott and Carson Wentz having a miscommunication that, like, ultimately was the nail in the coffin for the Eagles in this week. I will also say, though, from a fantasy perspective, that Boston Scott, Miles Sanders is going to get an MRI when you're listening to this today, Monday, to see whether or not he's healthy enough to come back. But I still think Boston Scott is going to be a waiver wire consideration because everybody is banged up and the whole thing is trash.
Can't argue with that.
Oh, we should talk about Zach Ertz. I mean, you want more trash?
Like, do we have to? I mean, do we have to talk about Zach Ertz?
10 targets, 4 catches, 33 yards, also banged up. But, like, Dallas Goedert is expected back soon. So, there you go.
Dallas Goedert's, like, that's a guy that I would, like, try to – if I made any trades, which I never do because I'm a coward in fantasy. But, like, I would try to trade for Dallas Goedert because I think, like, they need some answers at that – in the offense in general. They have this one guy coming back, and, like, they obviously have a lot of guys coming back, right? Like Jalen Reagor, DeSean Jackson theoretically still plays in the NFL. Same with Alshon Jeffrey. Like, we get reports about these guys eventually coming back. Who cares? I think Dallas Goedert's a guy that's going to be a big, big, big part of the offense. Like, they clearly still want their tight ends involved. Richard Rodgers pops up every now and again. Like, Zach Ertz is this close to breaking a tackle. At some point this year, he'll get some yards after the catch, but we'll see. So I would definitely, like, put Dallas Goedert's name in the back of your mind as someone to maybe get on the cheap before he comes back.
Fulgham is still pretty much available. And I know that there's, like, a hesitancy to adding a Travis because you mentioned, like, Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson coming back. But, like, I am with you. Like, who cares? It doesn't matter. Like, Fulgham is now, he is the guy. We just talked about how Zach Ertz is putting up the ball and being like, hey, Savior, you're it. And he has been it. So, I don't think that that is going to shift at all. Also, what remains a contest, a consistent rather, is Philip Rivers' inability to just chill the F out for a minute.
He can't help himself.
I mean,
he can't help himself.
No.
Like, even in a game where he's playing well, numbers are great, mm-hmm. you know, way above his expected completion percentage. Like, he's playing well. Still got to throw that fourth quarter interception to make things a little uncomfortable. But yeah, I mean, from a Colts perspective, it was at least nice to see them come up with some counter punches on offense because I think they sort of put themselves behind the eight ball with some of their early work. But Rivers did, outside of that one interception, which again is just a Philip Rivers requirement. It's part of the experience. You signed up for this, Indy. I thought overall, like, their passing game was much better today than it was in general. I'm still not ready to say this is a good team. I still don't really get it with the Colts. Like, they had to pull out all these stops to beat the damn 1-3-1 Bengals. So there's your lollipop for that. But yeah, overall, I'm glad that they got themselves out of that hole that they sort of dug themselves into.
Jonathan Taylor had 115 total yards. Marcus Johnson was the Colts' leading receiver because everyone predicted that, 5 for 108 on 8 targets. I think the interesting thought from a fantasy point of view is Trey Burton's involvement. I didn't like him, you know, poaching, running in a touchdown and poaching Jonathan Taylor at the goal line. But we've talked about Mo Alie-Cox not being healthy and kind of being faded. Jack Doyle did find the end zone in this one, which, of course, was just another extra tilt. But Trey Burton remains the option here. I believe that the Colts are on bye in week 7. So I wouldn't start messing if you need a tight end. Don't stream for week 7 because Trey Burton's not going to be on the field. Just FYI. Well, I mean, I feel like we have to make scheduling notes every week because everything is all, you know, for cocked. And so we don't really know who, I mean, they had a COVID test too, right? So anyway, they're supposed to be on bye. We'll see if it stays. T. Higgins went for over 120 yards. A.J. Green cleared 90. Tyler Boyd.
A.J. Green did a thing in the washed receiver bowl of A.J. Green versus T.Y. Hilton. A.J. Green clearly ahead.
when he reached to the side and kind of laid out for that ball at the end, I felt like I heard his groin creak, and I was like, oh God, like I could feel the pain for him. It just looked super uncomfortable, and I held my breath watching it, but was glad to see him bring it down. Are you, you're still treating T. Higgins as not the heir apparent anymore, but the like having leapfrogged AJ Green as the number one outside receiver in this offense though, right?
Yeah, I think if you're ranking for rest of season, you would have T. Higgins ahead of Green for sure.
Would you have Cam Newton ahead of Drew Lock? Because this game was a little bit yes. head-scratching. Also, we're talking about Phillip Rivers turning it over, and I was like, oh, you know who else does that but just isn't as old? Woo, Drew Lock can't help himself either. But after three different scheduled dates, we finally got this game, and man, it was lit. Zero touchdowns from Denver, but Brandon McManus had six field goals. Philip Lindsay managed over 100 yards. Tim Patrick, by the way, continues to be serviceable and under the radar. I've mentioned him on waiver wire pickup shows before. He went over 100 again, eight targets. I mean, Noah Fant wasn't in this one. KJ Hamler wasn't in this one. Maybe that changes for Tim Patrick, but I think we got to give him some respect at this point, even if it isn't a sexy name.
Yeah. The Broncos, like, good thing they have Tim Patrick, because since they've been so injury bitten at the wide receiver position, really all over their entire offense, we know the deal there. I agree. I had the same thought with Drew Lock and Phillip Rivers. I'm like, yeah, Drew Lock, you know what? You're young enough to make that mistake. Phillip Rivers, you should know better by now. Okay, you're too old to make that mistake, because it happened like sort of right around each other. But yeah,
the same time.
The Patriots were, I don't know what the deal with the Patriots were. They seemed very off. They seemed very, like, rusty. You made the point that they weren't having super secret COVID workout parties, theoretically, like the Titans were, who remained hot during their giant absence. You made that point in the halftime show. Maybe that has something to do with it. Cam was still fine in terms of fantasy, like over 19 points, because he had 10 carries, 76 yards, and a rushing touchdown. But definitely felt out of sync in terms of this Patriots offense. And, you know, I'm thinking that we might see something better going forward. But that was definitely a bit of a letdown.
Yeah, I agree. Next week, the Patriots will host the 49ers. 49ers, I believe, are playing right now, right? While we're recording.
Can confirm. They are playing right now.
So we will see what that looks like. But you're right. I have to imagine that this was a rust effort and they will tweak. We opened the show talking about Chicago at Carolina. Teddy Bridgewater never really got it going. But the thing about his gameplay that continues to impress and not even surprise me anymore, but just make me like give him a little bit of a fist pump is his rushing ability. Like, he's out there juking it up, and I appreciate it. Mike Davis, like, didn't have a standout game, if we're talking about the rushing game, in relief of CMC, but it was still useful enough because he found the end zone. DJ Moore finally got the volume, and Robbie Anderson got the YPR. I don't think Anderson, people who've rostered Anderson particularly care that it only came on, what, like four receptions, his 70-plus yards. When he laid out on the left sideline, it was a gorgeous thing to watch. He's going to get it done every week. Mm-hmm. He's still, I think, the team's number one, but DJ Moore did at least draw double-digit targets in this one.
Yeah, pretty much it was just those two guys in the pass game. You know, yep. Mike Davis still catches two balls, but just for 3 yards. No one else had more than 15 yards on the day. It was pretty much just the DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson show. And, you know, Mike Davis, the volume was still there. 18 carries on the ground. Like I said, two catches. He scores one rushing touch. That wasn't a big game, but, like, you know, this is, I think, what you expected. I still really like this Panthers offense. I think it's a good unit. This is just, you know, the difference between playing the Falcons last week right before they fire their head coach and playing the Bears defense, who might be, you know, one of the only three good defenses in the league right now.
Let's talk about the Chicago offense, though, because I agree with you about their defense. It is what it is.
Not much to say.
Right? Adding to the Darren Fells, Trey Burton tight end tilt was Cole Kmet, the rookie out of Notre Dame, finding the end zone, and Jimmy Graham grabbing five balls for 34 yards. Also, like, you're not going to see giant gains from Jimmy Graham. Andy made this point on last Friday's show, and that's that Jimmy Graham is going to back his way into the end zone, and that's where his opportunities are going to come, but he is not going to, like, stretch the field or rip off a long run after a catch or break many tackles. Like, that's just not in his skill set at the current place he is in his career. So Cole Kmet got the touchdown. If you thought that probably a tight end would get a touchdown, congratulations, bringing it all forward and together. You got the process right, but that doesn't matter because we live in a results-based world. Let's talk about, speaking of results-based, how do you think Matt Patricia feels about the result of his Lions traveling to Jacksonville?
Got to feel pretty good about himself, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty sick, you know, didn't lose because that's kind of the Matt Patricia thing is to lose games. I am hoping, though, you know, they're coming off like an actual normal bye week. Bye. One of the few teams in the NFL that has one of those right now, like a normal, we didn't actually go to the facility Denver Broncos style. And then on Friday, Saturday, find it. Oh, well, we're not playing. If you're Melvin Gordon, you better complain about it and then hop in a car after a few drinks. Whoops. Don't do that. I think with the Lions, like, I'm hoping during their normal bye week, they had some introspection and they looked at their backfield and they said, do we really want to be a team in 2020 that, like, runs through Adrian Peterson? Is that really the most conducive to success? Probably not. DeAndre Swift gets really involved in this game. 18 touches. He has one at the goal line. He rips off a 50-yard run. I think this is more like in an alternate universe. This was the Lions offense that probably could have been this way had Swift never gotten hurt. I mean, Peterson was still involved. Like, it wasn't as if they just threw him on the scrap heap or whatever. He had the early touchdown. He was also coming into this week, like, after having blood work done on him, so maybe that had something to do
the
with
appendix,
it as well.
Right?
Yeah, like Tom Pelissero from the NFL Network reported that they were worried it was his appendix, that he might have to have it taken out, but it wasn't. So he played today. So maybe we saw his workload and his role reduced because of that. He still played just one fewer snap than DeAndre Swift, but I just wonder if Swift right now, he's definitely a guy that's like trending up, right? Like his stock is on the rise after this game. But I'm hoping that it's more of a permanent sea change because I still think there's more excitement behind this Lions offense, you know, than we've seen so far is basically the long and short of it.
I mean, I would say it's less about Swift's health and more about him dropping the game-winning, the potential game-winning touchdown in week one and knowing that Matt Patricia
also
is like
true.
A disciplinarian, right? And I think that now they came into the bye and like he got, baby got put into the corner for a minute and now he is back in the good graces and here we go. So I do think, I am imagining like you and being hopeful, silver linings, here we go, that optimistic about this being a Swift change in the backfield and the rookie seeing more and more high value opportunities. Though, I mean, we can always anticipate that Adrian Peterson like is probably going to annoyingly vulture a goal line look or two every week because that's the way
it's
it
in his contract.
What was... Absolutely, yeah, that's a perfect way to say it. I think more tilting. I mean, that was like a good tilt. It was like good to be like, oh, I don't mind being wrong about Adrian Peterson. Great. The hard tilt was being wrong about Keelan Cole versus Laviska Shenault.
Holy shit. How much airtime did we give to Laviska Shenault on FFL this morning? That guy.
Well, I wrote
like,
about his ass. Everything.
Me too. Fantasy Football Live presented to you by Planters, State Farm, and Laviska frickin' Shenault.
Laviska Shenault.
10 yards out. 11 total yards because he did have one rushing yard. So there's your silver lining.
Well, I mean, he is versatile. We know that, right? That's part of his appeal, as we've discussed ad nauseum.
Yeah, we discussed it. I think the deal with the Jags here is like, I feel like the September shine was still on this team and still has been on this team for a decent amount. Like the way they opened the season with a surprising win over the Colts, they put 30 points on the Titans in week two. Man, that feels like so long ago. Now at this point, you know, they've gone under 17 points in three of their last four games. You know, it's not as if there's nothing of appeal in this offense. Like, James Robinson scores a touchdown in this game, but he has 12 carries for 29 yards. Like, I think this, you know, I'm guilty of this too. Like, continuing to rank him even in good matchups in the top 10 at the position is a mistake, because this is not the type of offensive environment that's conducive to that type of running back scoring. There's also not a lot, like, there's not enough volume and efficiency in this passing offense that if we get the Keelan Cole, LaVisca Chenault debate wrong, that there's going to be anything to save you. It's like, right. Well, it's going to be one or nothing. It's going to be one of these guys and then nothing for the other. Because Chark still had 14 targets. I mean, he didn't do too much from a fantasy perspective. Caught seven passes, but didn't go over 10 yards per catch. So I think we just kind of need to accept that this is what the Jaguars offense is. And like, for people, and again, I am completely guilty of this too, so I'm not calling anybody out, like, continuing to rank Robinson so high, continuing to prioritize Minshew as a really quality streamer. I mean, again, decent fantasy day today. And like, trying to find sleepers deep within the receiver core is probably a mistake because of the way this offense is right now.
But if we also are accepting things about this offense, we have to accept the fact that DJ Chark might just be the fulcrum under which it all revolves, or at least his connection with Gardner Minshew, because the other woof game was against the Dolphins and Chark wasn't in that one. And Chark was a game time decision for this one. He had, 50% efficiency is not a DJ Chark effort. And so I have to imagine that he isn't, just because a player takes, I mean, they're superhuman. They're like these wild athletes. And we know that his speed, anyway, right? Like, you could look back at any of his games at LSU and know that from an athletic perspective, he is absolutely electric. And if that is compromised, then he isn't able to do the thing that he is valued so highly for. And so I think that without him being healthy, now I'm also seeing how the ripple of that negatively affects the other pieces. And also adding in the fact that there isn't enough stability here to buoy anything else, to your point.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it. Like, Chark is that type of guy, and having him come in at less than 100%, like, who knows? And I think we do that. You're right to point this out. Like, I think we do this all the time with players. Like, oh, well, they were out there. Like, that counts. But they might not be their full capacity. Same thing with, like, Baker Mayfield. Like, we're all making jokes on Twitter about him. But, like, you know, it's a guy that probably wasn't 100% today, just like Jimmy Garoppolo the week before. But who knows? I mean, we have no idea.
We do have an idea about the Washington football team and the New York Giants. Let me just say, ideas. We do have an idea about the NFC East, right? Like, this is, we got to talk about it, because some people have these players on your fantasy squad. I don't really want to talk about Daniel Jones. Hooray, he got his first touchdown since week one. It's more interesting to talk about how he did that. And it was on a nice pass to Darius Slayton, who also added 74 rushing yards. I mean, it was Daniel Jones added 74 rushing yards, because he's doing the Carson Wentz type thing, which is, oh my God, everything is broken. I only have one guy who can do anything for me. And if he is compromised, then I guess I'm just going to run the ball and pray. Darius Slayton continues to be an X factor. He is the only receiver that Daniel Jones has eyes for. You're going to fire him up every single week, and he's going to live in that, like, low end wide receiver two area.
Woof. What a rough group. What a rough group here on offense. I didn't realize that Daniel Jones hadn't thrown a touchdown since week one. You said that, and I was like, really? I had to look that up. I can't believe that.
That's Darius Slayton also hasn't, because of the thing I talked about. That was also the last time Darius Slayton found the end zone. And like, He had two catches in this game. That's not hashtag good, but he saved the day in the end zone. But you're still going to not start Darius Slayton because of his different from the rest of the pieces ability, you know, and the fact that he's the only positive thing that Daniel Jones can lock in on other than running.
Yeah, they might get Sterling Shepard back soon. I think that'll obviously fix everything.
Oh, it's fixed. Yeah, that's the Band-Aid. I mean, poof, magic wand right over that, all of it. Kyle Allen passed for 280 yards and two touchdowns in the start. This was the first game we saw Kyle Allen as a Washington football teamer for all four quarters. And he also found Logan Thomas, who scored for the first time, I believe, since week one. So God, congratulations. Yeah. If anyone dropped him, like that happened. Terry McLaurin turned 12 targets into 7 catches and 74 yards. You're going to continue to start Terry McLaurin. It was nice to see him get back to being like the alpha receiver status after an underwhelming week 5. But you're going to continue to run out. What do you think about this backfield, though? I think that to me is that sums it up, I guess.
It's sad, right? Because I really do think there could be, some juice if Antonio Gibson like was the guy, but clearly this is not going to happen
because he's sharing duties with J.D. McKissic.
Yeah, J.D. McKissic, he of 8 carries for 41 yards and 6 catches for 43 yards. That is the Kyle Allen special for sure. It's awful to think that. I mean, number one, Alex Smith has like had his moment, I think it's all fair to say like that he probably shouldn't, like I don't really need to see Alex Smith play quarterback for this team again. I think Kyle Allen probably is better than Alex Smith at this point of their respective careers. That's not saying very much. I don't think it can be like Dwayne Haskins can't be worse than this. Kyle Allen might know the system, but good Lord. I think there's you've said this before. There's got to be something going on. I think they made their decision about Dwayne Haskins before they ever gave him a shot. Like, yeah, this is not my guy. Like, he needs to come in and completely wow us in order for me to if I'm Ron Rivera to consider him my guy. Didn't happen, obviously, and here we are.
And here we are. Do you think Aaron Rodgers is going to wake up tomorrow morning saying, and here we are? Or do you think he's going to text Ndamukong Suh and continue their chat?
Yeah, it's nice to see a couple of good old NFC North buddies catching up from the good old days of Sue's good old stomping days, I should say. Like literally stomping grounds, you know, NFC North stomping
grounds. I got it. I was like, I couldn't believe that the broadcasters weren't just going there. I was like, we know that these two have beef. Like this is a memeable moment. Let's just do it. But instead, we want to talk about like Tom Brady and his quippy repartee with LeBron James on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the worst thing in the world is whenever there's something that funny happens to Tom Brady, like his, you know, I forget what down it is, like holds up the 4 fingers. The worst thing in the world is that, you know, he's going to turn it into some like mildly charming semi-viral Twitter moment, or I should say his team is. So great. Good for you, Tom Brady. Ronald Jones is the engine of the Bucs offense.
Great. You're right to say that Ronald Jones is the engine of the Bucs offense with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans back, but the defense was the engine of this entire squad, which was much like debated going into this effort without Vita Vea in the lineup, and they did just fine without him. Picked off Aaron Rodgers, two separate times.
Yes, and forced 4 sacks. They were really all over him all day. I've been saying all season that on balance, like it's been no question that the Bucs defense has been better than the Bucs offense. They've been the strength of the team. I love the way Todd Bowles is like aggressive attacking. I mean, we saw Tim Boyle, the guy, the backup quarterback for the Packers. We saw Blaine Gabbert in this game. Like, yeah, I thought the Packers come into this game leading the NFL in points per drive, yards per drive, like clearly the best and most efficient offense in the NFL. And they just get worked in this spot, coming off a bye week too. And they get Davante Adams back. So, yeah, I mean, it could easily just be a fluke. But this was definitely the first like big test for the Packers. And they failed that test.
And they both had ample time to prepare because the Packers were on a true bye, as I guess we're going to call them. And Brady and the Bucks had the Thursday night game last week. So there was ample time to get ready for this one. I think what I find also when we're talking about the Packers, I was actually excited to see AJ Dillon out there just to see how he was running, especially against this defense. It was cleanup time. It was with Boyle under center, right? But it was nice to see him out. Well, nice in quotes. Like it was interesting to see him out there. On the Bucs side of things, I I get asked weekly, and I'm sure you do too, about, like, there's always, if I get a tight end streaming question or I get a start sick question, like, at all pretty regularly, Rob Gronkowski finds his way into a lot of questions. And I'm always like, nah. And now I feel like I can't just say that anymore. So are you considering Gronkowski? I especially thought in this matchup without Chris, I mean, now that Chris Godwin is back, that you definitely were going to have to fade Gronkowski. But like, he leads this offense in yards and targets, 8 targets, 5 catches, 78 yards. Rob Gronkowski averaged 15.6 yards per reception. I hate 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I was definitely surprised by that. And like the Mike Evans, like when Chris Godwin's involved, that's been a problematic situation too. Evans just 1 catch for 10 yards today. I expected a much bigger game because I expected this game to be more competitive. So yeah, I think Gronk is definitely inching more into consideration than he would have been, otherwise.
Do you think it's fair to say, we've already said that Ronald Jones is the engine of the offense. Do you think it's additionally fair to say that we should also mention that Leonard Fournette did not take the field? So he was a game time decision.
Surprisingly didn't take the field. Yeah. Yeah. People were reporting that, you know, Fournette was expected to play. He didn't end up going. I don't know what's up there, but like Ronald Jones has been good for 2 straight games. Like you wonder if, like, I mean, yeah, obviously Fournette's a big name, whatever, but you know, the coaching staff has no attachment to Fournette. You wonder if they'll keep it in Jones. I've no better than to like have conviction about this backfield. Okay. I'm not going to make my life that miserable on purpose. There's plenty to make life miserable. Okay. Don't need to go like doing that to myself. So I think that this could go any different direction. It wouldn't surprise me that even when Fournette is back there, he's not a big part of the offense because Jones has been playing really well of late, and the Bucs could conceivably just want to ride that momentum. Now, it's also worth noting, like, start your running backs against the Packers. Like, no team just was like, please run on us more than a Mike Pettine defense. We've seen that now during his entire stint here in Green Bay.
I just want to, like, say again about the Bucs that – when we went into, you said we've just talked about their defense, right? But I think there were some preconceived notions about how high octane, how ceiling based this offense could be. And it looks like this is not the Tom Brady redemption tour every week. This is a, we would like to win as a team effort. We have a solid, much like New England was, we have a solid defense. We have a capable backfield, and we have these receiving weapons that were certainly better than the last few years that Tom Brady had to have in New England. But also there is not going to be enough because of the strength of the defense necessarily, as the fireworks are not going to be here. So we don't, you know, I think we've consistently been ranking both Chris Godwin and Mike Evans inside the top 15. And I think we need to step back from doing that and just look at the matchups, look at which cornerbacks are suited or more likely to cover which of these receivers and kind of make choices from there.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why I wasn't really drafting either of these receivers. I love Chris Godwin. I love Mike Evans, but this was sort of the worry, was that they wouldn't be a Brady centric team. And I think obviously you could ask the question, is Tom Brady good anymore? I think we know, like, Brady's still pretty good. He's still got it. He's not completely washed up or whatever. He's been able to make it work with these guys at different portions of the season, but not all at the same time. Like you're saying, the volume is not there for that type of offense. I also think we can like forget about, like, okay, Scotty Miller and these other guys, like, he's not going to elevate these players to that point because they just don't have to, because their defense is good and they're running the ball pretty well too.
I don't think Joe Flacco still got it though.
Okay. Can we talk about Joe Flacco for a second? Like, we need to have a dialogue about this. What is Joe Flacco doing playing quarterback for the New York Jets? And I don't mean this how people might think. Like, is Joe Flacco, I know he's got to put kids through college and all that, and like, you know, $1.5 million is nice for anybody, but Flacco's made a lot of dough throughout his career. I wouldn't blame him one bit if he just like retires in a couple hours. You know, what the hell, Joe Flacco? Like, do you really need the $1.5 million this bad to play for the 2020 Jets? Like, I tweeted that and people were like, well, maybe he just really loves football. I don't know that the Jets are playing football in 2020, number one. I don't know what the hell they're doing out there, but I ended up playing football. And I tell you what, I watched Joe Flacco today because I put the Red Zone channel on and there was only two games, okay? There were two games to watch. So when I wasn't watching Aaron Rodgers getting sacked, I was watching Joe Flacco look like he was having the most miserable day of his life, you know, glaring at LaMichael Perine, you know, looking off into the distance at times. Like, we need to have a discussion about what is Joe Flacco doing playing for this team? Like, come on, Joe,
he expected that he would find the field, right? Like, I mean, I think he was like, oh, cool, I can low level Drew Stanton it a little bit with Sam Darnold's the future. How many flipping times have we heard Sam Darnold is the future? It doesn't matter about ghosts. It doesn't matter about accuracy. This is the future of the franchise. We're going to give him all the things in the draft, except we're only going to draft one damn receiver. And like, then, and then we're surprised when he has, I think when Sam Darnold got hurt and hurt his shoulder or his collarbone, I think Joe Flacco was the first person to let out an expletive, not Sam Darnold's mom.
Yeah. Yep. I completely agree. He's got to be like, I didn't sign up for this, okay? I didn't sign up to play. Like, no. When he goes out, gets his revenge against the Broncos, obviously that's got to happen. But he should have retired the next day. Like, fake an injury, Joe. Come on. You're a Super Bowl champion. You're a hero in the city of Baltimore. You don't deserve this. Nobody deserves to play for this Jets team. It's like, it's not even funny anymore how bad they are. It's really kind of sad. You know, you got the inevitable Greg Williams, Adam Gase beef. That was shocking. That's a shocker.
How does Greg Williams, I'm going to get in trouble for this one, but like, how does Greg Williams still have a job? Like, in, how is he still,
who's going to get you in trouble for that?
I mean, anybody who can, Greg, he can, obviously the powers that be, because every year he manages to get another DC gig, and I cannot figure it out. Like, how did this not stop in New Orleans?
I don't know. I mean, they're like, yeah, they're undisciplined and they're like dirty defenses literally everywhere he goes. There's always a moment during the first season that you have Greg Williams where it's like, okay, like, yeah, these guys get after it. Like, you know, they can put some pressure on the quarterback. They make some plays. And the longer he's there, the worse it gets. And obviously, like, you know, you've got two hothead personalities there in Gase and Williams. They're starting to fight now in the media. Great stuff. I really do wonder, like, I mean, are the Jets just cosplaying like a football disaster at this point? Or are they actually going to make a change at the head coaching position? Because, I mean,
said.
They're a joke. Like, they're a joke. I know we've seen bad football teams before, but like, you know, like Adam Gase splits out Frank Gore at wide receiver today after cutting Le'Veon Bell, who complained about not getting passing game reps. Like, it's just a troll job at this point, right? Like, it has to be.
Frank Gore had 70 scrimmage yards in this effort. Like, he was the bright spot. Rashad Perryman, by the way, he came back. You know, he's like, it's a return to greatness for Rashad Perryman, who led the team in receiving yards with a whopping 62. I mean, he did have like a long 20 plus yard catch, which was interesting. But like, no one is dealing with this. Like, I also never want to hear this Jamison Crowder crap ever again. Like, I'm done. We already ended the Chris Herndon nonsense last week. If you need to stream, and especially because Le'Veon Bell was no longer on the roster, Frank Gore makes sense. Fine. Let's talk about the Dolphins. Miles Gaskin rushed for over 90 yards. This looked like a gettable matchup for him. But again, we're still tilting at tight end. Like, once you get past the Jets tilt in general, then you see the Adam Shaheen tilt at tight end and Mike Gesicki, like,
and Durham Smythe.
Flipping bagel.
I know his name is Durham Smythe, but, you know, Durham Smythe, he gets the touchdown over Mike Gesicki.
Yeah.
Tough scene. Adam Gase didn't get to, what's his name? Gesicki. Mike Gesicki. Forgot about his name because he didn't score any fantasy points. Mike Gesicki didn't get his revenge on Adam Gase in this one. Tough break there.
There isn't enough revenge left to get all of it that is deemed necessary on Adam Gase.
No, clearly not. Hey, we got to see Tua in this one. That's the most exciting thing. I feel like we talked about this game longer than any of the others, which is probably like a crime against humanity.
Monday afternoon, we've got a doubleheader on Monday. So today, when you're listening to this, we've got Kansas City and Buffalo, and then Monday Night Football is Arizona and Dallas. Anything you want to keep an eye on other, or should we just like hashtag start your guys?
Yeah, I think you start your guys in this one. This game kicks off like what, 2 p.m. Pacific? 2 p.m. Pacific, right? This thing kicks off?
Yeah.
Well, like, that's weird. That's going to be weird. This like football season continues to push boundaries of like, how weird can we make this thing feel? It starts up out of nowhere, unexpectedly, you know, week one slaps you in the face. Then they throw these Tuesday night games at you. 2 p.m. now. I'm going to be done. I do my fearless forecast at 1 p.m. Yeah, expect a lot of great accuracy on those 1 p.m. on a Monday afternoon. And then I'll be done with them, and there'll be time to start watching football. What the hell? What a weird year.
Well, and it's disturbing because this is the game that I think is the most exciting, right? Like, I want to watch I want to see the Chiefs try to come back from a disappointing effort from the week before. And then you also want to see if the Tuesday night curse was what got into Josh Allen's head last week as well. It is all weird. No Thursday night this week. I couldn't remember the matchups for the, I was like, I almost made myself flashcards this morning for FFL to remember which teams were playing which teams in this week because of all of the shuffling. Anyway, Andy Dalton is going to make his debut. Like, why isn't anyone talking about this? Andy Dalton is going to make his debut as the Cowboys starter on primetime. Yeah, that's a narrative street thing to say, but it certainly always works out really well for him when the lights are bright.
Oh, yeah, that's right. If primetime Andy Dalton. Yeah, y'all are
I mean, like, everyone's expecting this, like, 4-touchdown, 330-yard effort. This is a primetime effort for Andy Dalton. Maybe he can exercise some demons of his own and reclaim that narrative, though. We'll see.
The silver lining, though, Liz, at least now he'll play in primetime for, you know, one of the most, actually the most popular team in pro football in Dallas, as opposed to playing for a team that nobody watches or cares about in the Bengals. So that'll certainly ramp down the pressure.
That's only going to make him more shook. Like, he doesn't want to know, He doesn't want to be America's quarterback.
I was being sarcastic. It clearly didn't land.
I don't know. The connection isn't wonky. All right, Matt, you file an article that weirdos read very late at night, but everybody else reads when they're listening to this, maybe. So it's going to come off of the Sunday night game. That's what you tell me every week when I ask you this question. What do you think you might tease it with, though?
Yeah, it'll come off on the Sunday night game. So Rams 49ers should be a treat. But I definitely want to talk a good amount about some of the things we talked about in this podcast. Like, you know, so a lot of the, you know, since we talk about every game, some of the things that I've already said on this podcast, I'll write again in the article, too. Definitely go read it.
Yeah, if you're into redundancy, check that out. Be sure to do it. We also have lots of, speaking of redundancy, podcasts. More of those. The Yahoo Sports NFL podcast with Charles Robinson and Therese Paylor. The Yahoo Sports College podcast with Dan Wetzel, Pete Thamel, and Pat Forty. You can follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at Liz Loza _FF. That is at Matt Harmon _BYB. One more thanks to Planters. Andy and Scott will be back tomorrow morning to talk pickups. I can't wait to hear all their Tim Patrick takes. Until then. We're out.
It's no secret that our world has been interrupted. A World Interrupted is a daily podcast telling stories of coronavirus and its impact on the economy. We want to cover the issues in the macro, global economics, the stock market, and our political climate. But we'll also cover the micro stories, maybe the ones you don't hear as much about in the news or the media. We hope you'll listen and be a part of the journey. So subscribe today on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.